And happy new year from all of us here at 830 WCCO. We begin again in a new year of car care. Thanks for joining us this morning. Denny Long here. Let me say hello to ASC Certified Technician, Master Technician, Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Happy New Year again, Nick.
Yeah, to you too, Denny. It's another nice sunny day here, or will be, I guess, once the sun is up, and we'll enjoy the cool weather. Doesn't look like it's going to last long, so enjoy the cold if you like it, and we'll see what comes next.
Yeah, the wind chill now, we'll talk about that, is 16 below wind chill. Officially, and there was a text that came in about that. We get that text usually every cold snap here on the show. By the way, if you have any kind of a car care question, you don't have to be a gearhead or a motorhead to, although we've got, we have a lot of mechanics that listen to the show as well. But if you drive a car, truck, van, and having problems with it, and you need to bring it in for service, but you kind of want to know what might be ailing, Nick will give you a little analysis over the radio, if you like. So call us or text us either way. One number will get you either. That's 651-461-9226. Wind chill. And again, every year we talk about this. How does wind chill certainly affects our skin? But I remember working late night overnights here on CCO when it was below zero, getting out to my car, and oh man, it was like it did not want to turn over. But in reality, does if it's zero outside like it is officially now, that's all the engine knows, right? I mean, is it affected by the wind chill? Can it cool it down faster? What's the deal with wind chill and cars?
No, you're correct there. I mean, the ambient temperature, that's all it really affects the vehicle. I suppose it is true that if it's windy, it will cool it faster. You know, but I think it's harder on our skin because it can create a bit of that burning sensation, you know, that that the frostbite that we could end up with. But as far as the vehicle goes, once it hits zero, that's all the colder it's getting. So even though the windshield might be sub-zero right now, which it is, the car is still just at zero. You know, on these cold days, you know, you might fire the vehicle up. People always ask, how long should I let it run for? Yeah. And, you know, the answer is, you know, you let it, you know, the vehicle after a few moments, once those fluids get moving around and things get lubricated, the vehicle's fine. Us as the drivers might prefer the car to be a little bit warmer, get the heat going, and some of those other things. So, you know, keep in mind if you have a remote start, obviously it's fine to let your vehicle run for those couple minutes, but you should never start your vehicle, leave the keys in your vehicle unattended because somebody's likely to hop in and drive away.
They do. People do, and they do run away with it. As far as letting things warm up a little bit, and I know, again, you just addressed it, but what if the temperature may be 30 is one thing, but the temperature is 20 below, is it just a waste of fuel if you kind of let that RPM kind of diminish a little bit until you it feels like, well, the car is sufficient? You know what I'm saying? I mean, isn't it dependent on how really cold it is or no?
Well, you know, the car wants to get into what we call closed loop. That's where, you know, it's up to, it's where the car's computer system is changed over from a set programming to where the oxygen sensors and some of the other components are managing the engine, the fuel trim, the fuel economy, a lot of these things. So when you start the vehicle on a colder day, it is going to take a little bit longer for it to get into closed loop, as we call it. However, the technologies out there that the cars do the best they can to get into that state quicker. So if a car is older, you know, 20 years old, the technology is not the same. It's going to take a little bit longer. Maybe the RPMs are up higher, as you kind of referenced there, and to let that run for a couple moments. But it's a minute. It's not 20 minutes. It's not, you know, it's not that long for the car to get itself to where it's satisfied and it's ready to go. It kind of comes down to where has the engine been running long enough where the antifreeze is here, the coolant is heated enough to give us heat, get that defrost working. You know, what I don't want you doing is hopping your car and you can't see out the windshield and you're headed down the road. So you need to make sure it's cleared the windows. It, you know, it's got some heat so you're comfortable, and then you're free to do as you like.
You know, we talk a lot about, and listeners send us texts about, excuse me, oil changes. And if someone has not changed the oil in a long time, whatever that might be, does the oil become thicker as it becomes dirtier? Maybe I'm asking an obvious question, but what changes take place, if any, if somebody should change it at 3,000 or 5,000, and suddenly it's 15,000.
Well, and the oil will collect carbon, dirt. You know, there's things that make its way through the combustion part of the engine, through the air, through the intake. There's things that find their way into the oil. Also, the moisture, you know, the heating and the cooling, the condensation. And that's where we get that sludge, that milky substance, which can kind of break down the oil. So if you've been really long on an oil, make sure you get the oil changed. Use a high-quality synthetic oil, like what your vehicle calls for these days, and then maybe you need to roll back the frequency on that just for a few oil changes to give the detergents in the oil the opportunity to clean up some of that carbon, absorb some of that moisture, get some of that sludge out of the engine. I'd be very careful about it, you know, like, and people always ask, well, can I put this product in there? Yeah, maybe, yes. You know, I'm not a big fan of a lot of those fix a car in a can type things because I don't think they necessarily do as advertised. Might they help? Sure. It might help kind of collect some of that carbon, some of that sludge, and kind of clean things up a little bit. But make sure you follow the instructions very clearly. Most of those products, if you use them, it's going to want you to change the oil a little more frequently to make sure you get that stuff out of the engine also because it might affect how things are lubricated.
Just to remind our listeners, their time goes by so quickly here on CCO that if Nick will be taking his leave of close to 7:45 this morning. So don't wait. If you have any kind of a car question, get some free advice here from Nick from Lloyd's Automotive, 651-461-9226. You can call it in if you'd like to chat with Nick. That's great. Otherwise, like other folks are doing, you can send a text. Again, 651-461-9226. We'll take this quick break. Be right back with more questions from our listeners on this Saturday morning. We're here, by the way, every Saturday, thanks to Nick, every Saturday right after the 7 o'clock news break here on CCO. Temperature now at zero, still at zero, 16 below wind chill. We might hit near 9 above today. Stay with us. News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. We are here every Saturday right after the 7 o'clock news break. Thanks to ASC Certified Technician Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive. He's answering any kind of a car care question you may have this chilly morning. We're at zero. Maybe we'll see 9 above today. Nick, folks that maybe are anticipating more problems with the vehicle and need to get the help from Lloyd's, how do we find you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you ever have a question, need some advice, don't hesitate to call and ask. You can reach us at 651-228-1316. And if you're out on a cold week here that's coming forward here on Grand Avenue, going for a stroll or grabbing lunch, stop and say hi. We're at 982 Grand Avenue, which is on the corner of Grand and Chatsworth in St. Paul. And then finally, please do check out our website, and that's lloydsautomotive.net.
Yeah, it is a fun avenue. I mean, if you have a chance to wait for your car to get taken care of, coffee, restaurants, you're kind of lucky to be working in that neighborhood, Nick. I'm sure you know that.
You know, I've had a lot of lunches at a lot of places on the avenue. You know, as you probably know, Jimmy John's is kind of kitty corner from us.
Yeah, right.
I probably have had more than 1,000 of those in my lifetime, so I need to be careful.
All right, we'll get you that information before Nick leaves us, which is about 7:45 this morning. So, again, don't wait. We'd love to hear from you with whatever car care question you might have, and we have some for you. Hi, Denny. This one says, is there a rule of thumb, interesting question, as to how many times you charge your battery overnight? When would I replace it? Maybe we could kind of differentiate the machine there. There's a charger, and I think what I have is like a tender. What's the difference, if there is?
Yeah, there is a difference. So, you know, a battery charger, a lot of times will have different settings of the amperage that's going to put into the battery. You know, 2 amps, 10 amps, 40 amps, or like a full load or a start cranking type setting. The tender, on the other hand, puts out about an amp. And it has like a float setting, meaning so when you put that tender under your battery and you let it sit there and cycle, it'll notice or measure the resistance, which will tell it the voltage of the battery. Once it hits a certain threshold, which is about you know, 12.6, 12.7 volts, it'll go into a float where it's not putting any additional power into the battery. But as the battery sits, it might lose a little bit of charge, and then that tender will kind of re-top it off, I guess is the best way to put it. Where a battery charge, on the other hand, oftentimes will have a timer, you know, a 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour setting, and then you'll set the amperage to like a low charge of that 2 amps or 10 amps, and you let it kind of go through, and it'll refill the battery up to its proper setting, and it'll shut off. You don't want to leave a battery charger unattended on a full continuous charge, because you can overcharge the battery and create some other issues there. So if you're looking for, I'm going to store my vehicle for a period of time, the tender is the correct tool to use, I guess is the best way to put it.
Okay.
However, if your battery's low on charge and you need to, you know, recharge it, using a battery charger, set it to like a 2 hour setting, you know, put it at 10 amps, let it, you know, charge the battery, put the voltmeter on after a little bit, see where it's sitting at. Once you get to that 12.6, 12.7 volts, you should be fine. Now, their question was, how many times can I do that? Well, there really isn't a number per se. I will tell you, though, if you're needing to recharge your battery because it keeps losing its charge, the battery's kind of used up. And yeah, at that point, you know, you probably need to replace it, because if you're finding yourself recharging it and charging it, it's probably lost its ability to hold a charge. One side note, though, if you're finding your battery continues to go dead, we always like to think it's the fault of the battery. However, there could be something within the vehicle itself that we're not aware that's wearing the battery down. So that's why when a car comes in, dead battery, we're going to try to charge that battery, you know, see where it's at, its status. But in the meantime, we're also going to put a meter on the vehicle to see if it's pulling from the battery when it's shut down, because that can oftentimes damage a battery or make it think that the battery itself has gone bad.
Yeah, something else is, I remember many years ago there was one of those little drawers in the dash you could pull out and had a light bulb in it, unbeknownst to me. And it was like, what would you call that? A parasitic draw, I think. Isn't that what you call it?
That's correct. You know, and it can be a light bulb, which you can visually see. It could also be one of those computers or modules that's not powering down properly, continuously draw from the battery. And depending on the size of the draw, you know, it could be a couple hundred milliamps or up to an amp. It's going to affect how quickly it wears the battery down. So you might say, you know, if I drive it every day, it's fine. But if I let it sit for a day or two, I need to jumpstart it. Well, because there's a slower draw that's continuously wearing the battery down.
Yeah, it happens. All right. Let's get some more texts answered here. This one listener says, I've got an older Ford Edge that the headlight has been going off. It will come back on if I switch from automatic to the on position, but can go off in that position too. I've been told that the ballast may be going bad. Does that sound right? Texter wants to know.
It might be. They're referring to one of those high-intensity bulbs where you have the bulb and the ballast, which creates the voltage change for it. And if it's kind of coming and going like that, you know, there's some tests that you can do to check the powers and grounds to the ballast. You can have the bulb tested also. So the first thing you can try is putting a bulb in it, which they can be expensive, so careful there, and see how that reacts. If the bulb itself seems to be okay and testing fine, well, then we're going to go further down the road, which would lead us to testing the ballast and, you know, potentially replacing that. That, too, can be kind of expensive. So make sure you're doing that, make sure the proper tests are being done before you just assume and replace them.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's grab a phone call this morning. Mark is calling in from, I believe, Rosemont this morning. Thanks for calling, Mark. What is your question for Nick?
Yeah, good morning, folks. Great show. I've got a 2012 Edge. Only got about 70,000 on it. It's in good shape. I started getting the ABS light and the traction control light. And so I put the scanner on. I've got a scanner. And the code I got was a code for a rear wheel speed sensor. So I'm going to replace that. But the car's doing a bunch of crazy things. I can be driving along, and then all of a sudden it'll go into limp mode and say no all-wheel drive for a couple seconds, and then it comes back. And I'm trying to figure out, I know it's hard to diagnose on the phone, but I'm going to replace that wheel sensor and maybe that fix it, but do you think there might be something else going on there?
I think you're on the right path. A lot of times when the computer system, whether it's the ABS traction control, it doesn't see that input from that wheel. So it's looking at all four wheels going down the road. It's monitoring their speed. If one of them is varying or changing or going away, it's going to think it's in a skidding or a spinning situation. So it can try to activate those systems. Or if it's like it's an open circuit, it might say, hey, that's not possible. So it'll just turn the light on and shut that system down. You know, cars are very good at protecting themselves. When they don't see something, they're going to shut that system down and flip the light on. So I think you're on the right track with replacing the sensor. Just make sure you're careful. You know, and that vehicle, I don't know if it's part of the wheel bearing or if it's an independent sensor that's mounted. A lot of times there's a set screw that holds it into place. If that's the case, be very careful. Take your time. Make sure you get that bolt removed carefully. You don't want to break the bolt because now you're creating another job where you're trying to drill it out and retap it. So just take your time. Maybe use a little penetrating oil. Clean things up really well. That's the biggest thing I can say is when you have something at a wheel of a vehicle in our climate with salt and such in the winter months, we get a lot of corrosion, a lot of rust in those areas. So take your time. You know, use some penetrating oil, get the bolt removed, clean the mounting surface and the mounting area of the sensor. We want to make sure that sensor is fully seated so we don't create a new problem where the depth of the sensor's changed so now you have another code. So just take it, like I said, for the third time, take your time and make sure things are clean and properly lubricated.
Very good. Nick, hang on. We're going to take a break and get that chilling forecast out. And just another reminder, Nick will be taking his leave about 7:45. We do have some text messages to answer. And if you want to call in or text, great, 651-461-9226. From Newstalk 830 WCCO. And a good Saturday morning again to you. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. Denny Long with Nick Stoffel, ASC Certified Tech at Lloyd's Automotive on beautiful Grand Avenue in St. Paul. Still have some time to answer your questions either by phone or by text, 651-461-9226. Here's another one for you, Nick. A 2020 Toyota RAV4 Hybrid. The auto tailgate acted up yesterday, had been in a cold garage for about a week. Would only raise up about 18 inches and then stopped and wouldn't go up or down. Had to manually force it down. Are you familiar with this problem? The car has no button to switch to manual. What do you think there?
You know, I have seen that, and I'd be curious to see how it operates as things warm up a little bit. You know, if you run the vehicle, get the heat in the vehicle, it kind of helps warm up those struts, so there's mechanisms that operate that. A lot of times some of these systems are designed to kind of open and close manually, but there's a sensor or a sense in there, meaning that, you know, if you were happen to be a person over there, it's not going to go and crush you. So I think what might be happening with the cold temperatures that mechanism itself is stiff and cold, so it's taking a little more current, a little more power to operate, and the car doesn't like that, so it's kind of putting itself in a lock mode, so it's not going to allow it to close. So, you know, in these situations, it is okay to manually close it. You know, there's a little more resistance there, but if you get it closed, it'll be fine. You're not going to break anything. As things warm up, see how it operates. You might find, though, like, you know, it's 0 degrees today that it's kind of misbehaving. Then it warms up into the 20s and it's fine. But as things go along, you might find that, you know, that same thing's happening when it's a little bit warmer. And that's kind of a telltale sign that those parts are starting to wear out for you.
All right. We have some callers as well. Busy morning here. Let's grab the first Ray calling in from Wayzata this morning. Thanks, Ray. What's your question this morning?
This is a weird little annoyance. Is there something that can be done to reduce the frosting of my windshield? I come out and I have to scrape for 10 minutes. My friend's car parked in the exact same conditions. I go and check his windshield. His is clear. Why is mine so frosted on the inside?
Well, there's some moisture in there somehow. You know, a couple of things we can try is maybe run the heat on floor to allow any moisture to kind of dry up. You know, the air is very dry, but there's moisture in the vehicle. As the vehicle cools down, it's going to kind of, you know, there's just some condensation there, and that's going to freeze to the windshield. So if you can get the vehicle to dry out really well, also where you're parking, maybe flip the car around instead of pulling them back in, because the way the car is sitting, you know, sometimes when the sun comes up, you notice that one side of the road, all the windshields are clear. The other side of the road, they're all frosted over. That might be a little trick you could try also, but I think you probably have a little moisture inside the vehicle that needs to dry up, and try to run the heat, like I said, to try to cycle that through, and hopefully that'll dry it out and clear the windshield for you.
Just helping out. Some cars automatically the AC goes on. I can manually change it. But what about the AC as well? Would that help too with your suggestion?
Correct. So when you run the defrost in the vehicle, it actually operates the compressor. I understand that the air is very dry in the winter months, but if there's moisture inside the vehicle, that's what's going to stick to the glass, and that's where we get the frost or the fog from. So having that dry air that cycles through the air conditioning, even though it's hot, the compressor is still drying that air, so you're getting the dry air that's clearing the windshield versus taking that air with moisture and kind of recycling and doing it over and over. It takes a little bit longer. So, you know, my thought, though, is that maybe the floor mats or something that vehicle has excess amount of moisture, and then as that, you know, cools down and it releases that moisture, it's sticking to the windshield. So we need to get everything dried out. I think once it's all fully dry, he won't have that problem anymore.
Yeah, interesting question, Ray. Thank you. Let's grab another call before we run out of time. Hillary's calling in from Springfield this morning. Hillary, good morning. What is your question for Nick this morning?
Yeah, Nick, I have a 212 Dodge Avenger. It has about 165,000 miles on it. The heater has given me a big problem. I've had it checked a couple of times. It heats a little bit on the left side, the driver, but on the other side, it heats nothing. So my mechanic said that it's about an $80 part to replace, but he needs to take out the entire dashboard to get at that part and to fix it, and it would be maybe from $500 to $800. You got any ideas?
So what they're referring to is when we have like dual zone heating, driver side, passenger side, there's going to be separate temperature doors or, you know, blend doors. And what that is that when the when we turn the fan on, the fan's going to pull the air from the outside and it kind of goes through the heater core or the evaporator for the air conditioning. Depending on the season, we're going to change the temperature from, you know, from cold to hot. Well, we're in the hot setting. We want those doors operating in a manner where we have the full heat. Well, in this vehicle, and a lot of most newer vehicles, to be honest, they have like the driver and the passenger differences. Well, so there's two different little flaps or doors that are controlling that heat. Well, what can happen is, in like this case, where that actuator, the little motor that operates that door, can fail. Now, when you get up under the dash, you can usually see a couple of these motors, but not all of them. In this case, you know, they're telling him that this motor is located like probably on the top side of that heater box, which isn't very accessible. So you have to remove the heater box, which sometimes involves removing the dashboard. So as you can see where we're headed here, it can become a multiple-hour, very expensive undertaking. It is possible maybe you can check back with these folks that if they can at least get to the unit, is there a way to manually move it and unplug it? So here, I know it's, you know, we're just in January, so you'll need heat for the next few months, but maybe it's possible to get up to it, move it to hot, and unplug it so it'll stay at hot. Now, obviously, come the summer months, that's not going to be very helpful, but at least that'll buy you some time to maybe save up the funds or figure out a plan to get it repaired, and then you can have heat throughout these next few months, especially this week. So I would take it back, ask your friend or your mechanic there if they can turn it to hot and unplug it. At least it buys you a few months to, you know, come up with a plan.
Nick, we got time for maybe one more text, and whatever's left over, I'm going to begin the show next week. Apologize for that, but we'll open up the show with any questions we did not get to this week. 2018 Jeep, a texter says, have a dash light regarding the stop-start system, needs service. My dealer tells me I might get stuck at a stop sign and the car won't restart. What can you tell me about this issue?
Well, most newer vehicles now have that start-stop technology, and it's a good thing. So when you come to a stop sign, stop light, the vehicle comes to a full stop, the car shuts off. When we take our foot off the gas, put onto the gas, it restarts. Well, a lot of vehicles also have two batteries that kind of control this system too. So if the batteries deplete bad enough or to such an extent, yes, it's not going to restart the vehicle. So there are some warning signs, there's some indicators on the dash. You'll have some heads up, so you're not going to be just stranded. But if you're in at the dealership or your mechanic and they're testing these things, saying that they're at the point where they need replacement, it is a good idea to do that before you do become stranded. So I understand it's frustrating, but it is a good thing because the emissions that are emitted at like a stoplight are the highest percentage of the emissions that come from a vehicle. So we're doing a good thing for the planet. It's frustrating for us because now you have another part to replace, but you know, it's a small price to pay for a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, good. Well put. Nick, we're out of time. For those again that need the service from Lloyd's Automotive, how do we find Lloyd's?
Yes, sir. So if you have a question, need any advice, don't hesitate to call. You can reach us at 651-228-1316. And if you're on Grand Avenue at any point in time, stop and say hi. We're at 982 Grand, two blocks east of Lexington Parkway. And then, as always, do check out our website. That's LloydsAutomotive.net.
Will do, Nick. Thanks so much. Let's talk next week.
Sounds like a date.
All right, Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive. Ted Farrell's Wine Chat next up here on 830 WCCO.